Welcome to the Uncrowned Wrestling Show. Sala Monster here for Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. New Japan Pro Wrestling announced this week that they are going to be holding an event in the middle of an airport, September 18th at Center Plaza in New Chitose Airport. It's going to be part of the celebration of the airport's 100th anniversary. See, I love stuff like that. It's like when WWE had a show in the middle of Penn Station. You would never see that today. But they did. They had a show at night in the middle of Penn Station. They had a WrestleMania workout in the middle of Times Square before they did the Lawrence Taylor Bam Bam Bigelow match. That's the only thing that would make this next flight delay more tolerable, if I had a wrestling show to watch in the middle of the airport. I hope the week was kind to all of you. Well, I've got a lot to dive into here in this episode. We got to talk about Saturday night's main event. If you were a Knicks fan, you loved it. If you're not, well, you didn't miss much, I can tell you that. Actually, there probably were some Knicks fans who watched that show and thought, what the hell is this? In a different timeline, you know, they would have been in San Antonio and Seth Rollins would have been in the ring with Wemby, hosting up the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Plus, AEW redemption predictions for the pay-per-view coming up this Sunday and a bunch of other news and notes, including this. You know, I'm watching all of these clips coming out of Fanatics Fest this weekend. And the one that had me cringing the most was Tom Brady slapping, and you can't see me right now, but I'm putting this in air quotes, slapping Logan Paul in the most contrived pull apart that you'll ever see. The two of them have been trading shots back and forth now for months. I mean, Brady's been on Logan's podcast before. Earlier this year, in fact, Brady got wrestling fans all riled up when he called it cute and scripted. That's what he called WWE. Oh, it's cute. It's cute and scripted. He said WWE stars aren't as athletic as NFL players. Well, now comes a story from TMZ that there are ongoing conversations between the seven-time Super Bowl champion and WWE. They mentioned Brady slapping Logan at Fanatics Fest and then flipping him off during the World Cup final on Sunday, where both were in attendance. They point out that Brady is a minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, as is Ari Emanuel, CEO and chairman of TKO, which, of course, is the company that owns WWE. You know, we know how much Ari and TKO love their celebrities in WWE. They single-handedly sabotage one of the WrestleMania main events this year because of their obsession with it. And so now we're faced with the prospect of, I don't know about a match, maybe a match, or something else involving Tom Brady and Logan Paul. The idea of doing something with the two of them and positioning Tom Brady as the babyface in that scenario is hilarious to me, considering the comments that he made about wrestling and how much he pissed off wrestling fans. Like, but can you imagine them trying to babyface the guy, or even worse, making Logan Paul the babyface? As like the defender of WWE. That sounds absolutely awful. I am jumping the gun here. There's no way they would bring in Tom Brady as anything other than a good guy. But all of this just sounds so bad. No one is asking for this. But they will never miss an opportunity to get a celebrity involved if they are open to it. If it brings eyeballs to the product, like in their eyes, it mainstreams them. It's like some sort of weird validation that they crave. Same thing with all the Knicks stuff on Saturday at Madison Square Garden. But at least with that, you know, the Knicks just won their first championship in 53 years. Jalen Brunson's out there. It's his first time back at the Garden since they won the trophy. Danhausen has been tied into them now for the past few months. I mean, that was more of a happy accident than anything else. But I get it. Like, it's New York. You know, the Karl Anthony Towns cameo, the Brunson stuff with Roman Reigns. Like, if you were going to do it, that's the place to do it. It's the only place where it works to have them out there where it's going to be a really big deal and they're going to be treated like kings. And the fans in the building, you know, have them actually give a damn. I can't say the same for the people who were watching at home or in other countries. I can't imagine anyone watching that show in the UK or Canada or Australia gave a single solitary shit about Roman Reigns presenting Jalen Brunson with his own replica belt, or Tyrese Halliburton coming out with a steel chair. But I'm like, I'm watching this thinking, like, what is this? Like, Bash at the Beach 98 with Rodman and Malone? It didn't make much sense watching Seth Rollins out there being positioned as the heel in this scenario when he's been the babyface since coming back from the injury. But, you know, story goes out the window when it comes to celebrity involvement. It's the same thing that happened with Pat McAfee earlier this year. Whatever story they had in mind for Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton, and it's not like those two don't have history together, but it was gone the minute that Ari Emanuel wanted his boy involved. Everything got flipped upside down. One thing was very clear on Saturday, if it wasn't already, when it comes to WWE, it's not about the stories. It's about the moments. Now more than ever, they are a company built on moments, viral moments. Everything else is secondary. We have an update on the Vince McMahon sex trafficking lawsuit that was first filed in 2024. This was not unexpected, as a few weeks ago, Janelle Grant, the alleged victim who filed the suit, Vince McMahon, and WWE, both of whom are defendants, all filed a joint motion requesting to continue things in private arbitration, which is the opposite of what she was arguing for. She wanted it to go to trial and be out in the open and for the judge to invalidate the NDA that she had signed. That's a complete 180 from what she was asking for. And so now it is official. This thing is moving to private arbitration, which effectively ends things for all intents and purposes, at least as far as the public is concerned. This is not a settlement. It is simply moving things to a different phase, in private, to be worked out whether it ends up in her favor or his. But per Post Wrestling, a joint status report was filed by Grant's attorney Ann Callis in the U.S. District Court in Connecticut on Monday, stating that her client, along with defendants Vince McMahon and World Wrestling Entertainment, have agreed in writing to go to arbitration over the dispute. Grant will also file a stipulation of voluntary dismissal with prejudice, meaning it will be permanently closed and cannot be revisited, within 5 days to dismiss the suit in its entirety. This will all require the approval of the judge before the suit is officially dismissed and moved to arbitration. This all came about because he stopped making payments to her on what he had promised as part of that non-disclosure agreement. Had he just kept paying her, we never would have heard about any of this. I'm glad we did, because the man deserves to be dragged for it. Countless NDAs with multiple women. I want it all to come to light. But that's the only reason she filed suit in the first place. And I assume she just got to a point where she and or her lawyer came to the realization that she may not win this, or it just put enough strain on her and her finances to where she wanted this to be settled one way or the other as quickly as possible. And that's her prerogative if that's how she feels. But I think this ended the way that most people figured it would, which was either in arbitration or with a settlement. He still has the Ring Boys lawsuit pending, though, so he's not out of the woods legally just yet. Former WWE champion Sheamus, I mentioned him a couple of weeks ago, turning down an offer by WWE to restructure his existing deal, take a pay cut, and that he would soon be a free agent for the first time in nearly two decades. Well, now we have a date as to when that will be. Fightful Select reported on Sunday that Sheamus will remain under contract to WWE until the 1st of October. Now, originally, the reports made it sound like he would be a free man imminently, but it's going to take a little bit longer. The report notes that it's unclear whether Sheamus had additional time added to his contract or what exactly led to his deal expiring later than initially believed. He is said to have swiftly rejected WWE asking him to restructure his deal earlier this year. However, Fightful notes that the deal offered to him was not presented as an ultimatum as it had been with, I guess, some other people. So basically, TKO, if you read between the lines here, TKO thought he was making too much money relative to how he was being used. He's been out since December after having shoulder surgery, and they wanted to cut his pay. By how much, we don't know. And it's really none of our business unless he wants to share that one day. But there have been stories that some talents were asked to take as much as a 50% pay cut. Doesn't mean that he was one of those people, but either way, he was making X and they wanted him to make Y. And he said, go kick rocks. And so this is where we are now. I look forward to seeing where this next chapter of his career lands him, because I think if he can stay healthy, and that's the key, at 48 years old and a lot of mileage on his body, can he stay healthy? If he can, he still has a lot left to contribute, whether it's on the indies or whether it's signed somewhere else. And that somewhere would likely be AEW, because I cannot imagine that Tony Khan would not have an interest in bringing him in. I mean, the man is known for having banger matches, and Tony lives for banger matches. He dreams about them when he lays his head on the pillow at night. The man is a wrestling fanatic. Who wouldn't want Sheamus on their roster? And I'll point this out, October 1st would put him right before the Continental Classic later this year. The timing would be perfect for him to be in that tournament. Keep your eyes, by the way, on the Motor City Machine Guns, Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin, and The New Day as well, because their non-competes should be up shortly, possibly as soon as this week. Dynamite and Collision are in Detroit next week. Gee, wouldn't that be a fine place for the Motor City Machine Guns to debut? Two Michigan boys. Raw was also in Detroit last night. WWE announced another Worlds Collide show this past week, pitting WWE stars against AAA stars, their first since September of last year, and the date and location they chose just so happens to be the same date and location as AEW's All Out pay-per-view. Saturday, September 26th. Worlds Collide comes to the Allstate Arena in Chicago, which they just ran 2 weeks ago for Raw, while All Out is going to be emanating from the Now Arena in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, which is just outside of Chicago. This is coming off them scheduling an NXT Great American Bash show last month to run opposite the AEW Forbidden Door pay-per-view, and the announcement that there's going to be an NXT Heatwave show the same day as All In London next month. But to listen to the tribalists, they don't consider AEW to be competition. No, sir. Not at all. They sure do spend a lot of time paying attention to what they're doing for a company that they don't consider to be competition, though. But it's Chicago, so don't be surprised to see them put CM Punk on that show to help sell tickets and draw some interest away from AEW that weekend. That wasn't the only announcement they made. We know that WrestleMania is being held in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, next April. What we don't know is what the actual dates of the shows are going to be. We don't have dates yet for WrestleMania, and it's July. But because they're going to be outside the country, they still want to have a presence here on American soil. And so WWE will be hosting WrestleMania watch parties for both nights of WrestleMania inside the theater at Madison Square Garden. And there's going to be other watch parties across the country in different places. We just don't know where yet. But their plan is to expand it cross-country. Now, in addition to that, they're going to be running two other events that same weekend, also from the theater at Madison Square Garden. Again, we don't know the exact dates yet, but one will be a AAA show called AAA Eternal Glory. The other one will be the annual NXT Stand and Deliver show. Now, they had moved that away from doing the NXT show WrestleMania weekend this year because WrestleMania was back in Vegas, and they realized how ridiculous it is to do an NXT show locally at 10 o'clock in the morning. But next year, it's going to be back to WrestleMania weekend, because WrestleMania being in Riyadh is going to be airing earlier than usual. That's probably going to be a 1 p.m. start time here in New York. So they can do shows from MSG or the theater at MSG at like a more normal time. You know, you could do a 7 o'clock show or an 8 o'clock show that night. But I'm sure it's also their way of trying to deter Tony Khan and others from running their own shows that weekend. Now, I still think Tony should lead the charge on a wrestling festival of sorts. I've talked about this. Fill the void that's going to exist, you know, here domestically that weekend for wrestling fans. And it doesn't even have to be that weekend. It could be the weekend before. It could be the weekend after. I mean, come to think of it, maybe that's why they haven't announced the fucking dates yet for WrestleMania. Holy shit, that probably makes all the sense in the world. They're going to drag this out as long as they possibly can, aren't they? Now we know why the dates haven't been announced yet for WrestleMania. It's keeping everybody else in limbo. But I said it when they first announced Mania for Saudi. I think it would be a great idea if he took the lead on this and hosted a major event somewhere domestically. And I threw out New Orleans out there as one, you know, possible location. New Orleans got the shaft this year. They were supposed to get WrestleMania this year. They had it taken away from them. It'd be kind of poetic if they did something there. And then you let indie promotions piggyback off of it that week. You know, maybe some wrestling conventions, WrestleCon comes to town, all the stuff they usually do for WrestleMania weekend. They even have that new My AEW streaming service that they started up a few months ago. They've made deals with a whole bunch of different indie promotions to air their content on there and stream their shows on there. They could air the events live. Whatever events are happening that week or weekend around the AEW show, they could stream those events live on their own streaming platform. I think it makes a lot of sense. Now let's go back to SmackDown here, because there was some big news coming out of that show on Friday, which is that Rhea Ripley, the reigning WWE Women's Champion, who we have not seen since Clash in Italy and her win over Jade Cargill at the end of May, Rhea Ripley is out of SummerSlam. She will not be medically cleared from her partially torn meniscus. She talked about it a few weeks ago when she was at the Power Slap event. She said that it's, I think, partially torn, but it's in a very weird location. And so she's just kind of taking it day by day, week by week. She was having trouble bending the knee. Well, she's not going to be cleared in time for SummerSlam. And so as such, an interim women's champion will be crowned in a five-way ladder match on that SummerSlam show. This will be the first interim champion in WWE in 6 years. That was in NXT during COVID when JD McDonagh, he wasn't able to travel to the US. They held a tournament to crown an interim cruiserweight champion. So that was the last time they did this. Now they started having qualifying matches on SmackDown. Jade Cargill has already qualified, and Tiffany Stratton, the women's US champion, has qualified. Now, when Jade qualified, she did so by beating Nia Jax by disqualification in what was more of an angle than a match. It was a horrendous television segment. Just atrocious. And Charlotte Flair interfered. And so Nia Jax is going to get another crack at it because it wasn't her fault. She's going to wrestle Charlotte this Friday. So they're rewarding bad behavior by allowing Charlotte now to have the chance to qualify for this match. So basically what they're doing is they're going to absorb the Charlotte and Jade rumored singles match for that show into this five-way ladder match, because I cannot imagine that Charlotte doesn't qualify on SmackDown this Friday. Of the two of them, if you assume that one of those two is going to end up with the belt in this match, I would rather it be Charlotte than Jade. In either case, I'm sure it's temporary anyway, but if I had to pick one over the other, I'm going Charlotte over Jade. And then, so that's two spots right there, and you look at who's going to occupy the other three. JC Jane would have been a great choice. JC Jane is a relatively new name still. They only got called up. Fatal Influence did from NXT a few months ago. JC is a former NXT Women's Champion, TNA Knockouts Champion, because she won the TNA title while the two promotions were actively working together. And so JC having one of the five spots in that match as someone new on the brand who you would think they would want to push would make a lot of sense. Instead, they bounced her out of the qualifying match. She lost to Tiffany. So she's not going to be in it. Alexa Bliss, Charlotte's tag team partner. She was written off television seemingly a couple of weeks ago with that injury angle where Jade wrenched her arm and she's double jointed. So like her arm was just like twisted and bent at this disgusting angle. And it felt like, okay, well, that's their way of writing her off TV. We're not going to see her for a while. And it may be that she wrote her, or they wrote her off TV because it's a cover for a possible real injury to her elbow. I've seen that sort of talked about. I don't know if that's a confirmed report or not. I don't believe it is. But anyway, I'm not expecting Alexa Bliss to have anything to do with this. So you put her on the side. Who else are you left with? Right? You got three spots to fill. Chelsea Green, who I wouldn't say has really been booked in any kind of serious way. I think it would be great if she occupied one of those spots, but you got Chelsea, you got Julia, you've got Kiana James, you've got Candice LeRae, who literally does nothing every week except show up standing next to her husband, who also does nothing but lay there and plank on a crate. This has been going on for months, by the way. Blake Monroe, right? The former Mariah May, big fan of Blake's. We have yet to see her wrestle a match on the main roster. She's been called up for a while now. They've been running vignettes, and then she finally showed up on the show. She attacked Julia. She's been attacking different people. She has her checklist, I guess, of people that she beats up in the back or in the ring. She's beaten up Julia. She's beaten up Kiana. She's beaten up, I believe, Chelsea. She's beaten up Candice this past Friday. She's doing everything but actually wrestling. So to put her in a ladder match to crown a new interim women's world champion when she hasn't even wrestled a match yet would seem very unlikely. I wouldn't mind it, because they don't really have a lot of great options here. The only other person I could think of that you're really left with, I mean, take Meechan and B-Fab, put them on the side. I mean, they're basically just, they're lackeys for Jade. I mean, again, I don't see them being in the ladder match. The only other name I could think of is Jordan Grace, and it just seems to me like Jordan Grace is done. I don't know what the hell is going on with Jordan Grace. It can't be an injury because they have her wrestling the occasional match on main event that they tape before the show. I don't know what the hell is going on with her, but it's laughable, the idea that she's suddenly going to pop up in this ladder match. Let me talk about the interim stuff here. I think the interim stuff is completely stupid. I think it is stupid. I think it is unnecessary. I know there's a lot of MMA fans on Ariel's feed who are well acquainted with interim champions in the UFC. I don't know how MMA fans generally feel about that whole concept. I mean, I suppose there's value in having them if it leads to someone defending that interim title in a pay-per-view main event, and that gets them more money, right, until the champion is ready to come back. If it gets them more money, then good on them. I don't know if that's the case or not. We're talking about TKO here, so probably not. That's certainly not the case in WWE. You don't get more money for being the champion. This isn't 1986 anymore. In this case, there's just no need for it. They're justifying it by saying that Rhea is close to returning. They just don't have an exact timetable on when, right? It could be a week, it could be 2 weeks, it could be a month. But why should that change anything? See, I say, and I have been harping on this now for a few weeks, bring back the old 30-day rule for title defenses in pro wrestling. If you are not able to defend your championship at least once within a period of 30 days or due to injury, you are stripped and a new champion is crowned. And when the original champion is ready to return, they have a ready-made program waiting for them. Okay? Look at the SummerSlam main event this year, one of them, with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. A key part of the story, a key part of the explanation that Rollins has given on television for, you know, wanting this match, is that Roman is holding the belt that Seth never lost. Seth got hurt. We didn't get an interim champion then. No, they stripped him of the championship. They crowned a new champion. Seth came back many months ago at WrestleMania from this injury. He is looking to get back the belt that he was never beaten for. That's as good a reason as any for the two of them to be fighting. Right? More than just, oh, we were in the Shield together 14 years ago. Like, who gives a shit? He's absolutely right. He never lost the title. He should have a chance to win it back. So I think it's stupid when AEW does the interim stuff. They've done it a few times over the years, and it's stupid here too. Saturday night's main event this past weekend at Madison Square Garden. First time in 19 years that they've held a Saturday night's main event show at MSG. One of the weakest cards of any really show, period, of any Saturday night's main event, surely, that they have done. If you missed it, you didn't miss anything of any real significance outside, I guess, maybe of the tag team match, which was the best thing on the entire show, the true main event of the show. I know Roman Reigns and Jalen Brunson got the final 20 or 25 minutes, but it was Cody Rhodes and CM Punk. Can they coexist? Opponents at SummerSlam. They were partnered up to take on Gunther and Sami Zayn. And that was a really, really good match. But I said coming into it that, you know, this was going to be a one-match show. That's exactly what it turned out to be. We do have new women's tag team champions in Fallon Henley and Lainey Reed, two of the three members of Fatal Influence. So JC Jane didn't have a lot of luck on SmackDown in her qualifying match on Friday, but at least the other two won the tag team titles on Saturday. We had Danhausen and JD McDonagh. They've been building this story up for weeks and weeks where Danhausen, you know, he stole money from them because they came to him with $100,000 to put a curse on Obafemi. And when he found out who the curse was going to be on, he chickened out and backed out of it, but he kept the money. I mean, this is the story. This is the story. But it's Danhausen. And so, of course, they said it was going to be a no disqualification match. You knew there were going to be all kinds of hijinks and shenanigans. And I knew at the minute that, you know, the night before on SmackDown, Danhausen was being interviewed in the back and he was being asked by Jackie Redmond, like, you're going into this match. I mean, you have nobody to watch your back. And he goes, aha, I do though. And he pulls out a little like animal cage and inside is a stuffed animal. He's got a cat. As soon as I saw that, I knew what that meant. I knew where they were going to be on Saturday and I knew exactly what that meant. I'm sure 95% of the people watching who don't really care or pay attention to the Knicks or the NBA. They had no clue. And sure enough, during the match, he's got his cloning machine on the stage, and he takes the cage with the stuffed animal in it, and he tosses it in, and the door opens, and there's smoke billowing out, and out walks Karl-Anthony Towns of the New York Knicks. And he goes down to the ring, and he, first of all, he's a big boy, okay? Every bit of 7 feet tall. But he gets in the ring. He gives J.D. McDonough this choke slam. I'm going to take a moment here to really acknowledge the greatness of J.D. McDonough. Because this guy, he tries to make the most of every opportunity that's given to him. Obviously, he's not positioned as any sort of like major star who's going to go out there winning championships, you know, like in a singles role. But he goes out there. He bumps his ass off. And he makes every... He did it again last night. He had a match with Obafemi last night. It didn't even go 60 seconds. But the way that Oba was tossing him around and he was bumping and selling for him, man, it was great. He took a back body drop last night. I'm not sure he's come down yet. But in this match, he took this choke slam. And all Cat had to do was just stand there and literally just like pick his arm up and put his arm down. He didn't have to do anything. McDonough did all the heavy lifting himself. And this choke slam looked incredible. And then he gave Dom a choke slam through a Slim Jim table. And in the end, of course, Danhausen got the win and celebrated with Cat and all the mini Danhausens that were running around. It was the crowd-pleasing match of the show. You know what to expect when you have Danhausen out there. I'm going to talk more about him in a little bit. As impressive, by the way, as it is that he uncursed the Knicks and they went on to win the championship, at an autograph signing right before the finals of the World Cup on Sunday, Danhausen cursed Argentina, who then went on to lose the World Cup to Spain. There's something really eerie going on here. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but there's definitely something eerie going on here. Lyra Valkyria, she got a win over Bailey very early in the match. Bailey caught her with an elbow to the nose. And immediately, blood begins pouring out of Lyra's nose. I don't know if it was broken officially, but it looked like it was broken. I mean, it didn't look mangled or anything, but there was so much blood coming out. It was blood splatter all over the floor outside. And in the end, she got the clean win over Bailey. She just turned heel recently, so this was a big win for her. Everybody was talking, though, about Bailey. What does this mean for Bailey? Because when the match was over, she attacked her outside the ring. She slammed her on top of the ring steps. Was this their way of writing Bailey off? Is Bailey done? Has Bailey taken her final bow in WWE? And the answer is, well, we don't know the answer. I don't think we have, not yet. But I do think, I mean, look, there was a lot of talk about her contract being up at some point later this year. If that is the case, and she's going to be a free agent unless they make her a new offer or she agrees to sign a new deal, she could potentially be gone in the next few months. She's the one on the WWE roster that I could see walking out and going to AEW. You know, her best friend works there. I'm sure the two of them, her and Mercedes Moné, they would love to work together again. There's tons of women on that roster that some of whom she's friendly with, who I know she would love to get in the ring with. And Bailey is just at a point right now in her run in WWE where, like, she is where she is. I don't get the sense that the real focus is ever going to be on her again. She's been there for a decade now. And I just don't know what else there is for her to do, frankly, that she hasn't already done, other than just continue to put people over, as she did with Lyra on Saturday. The only problem with that is that if that's all that you do and you just keep losing to people and losing and losing and putting them over, at some point, what does it really mean anymore? So I could absolutely see her going out the door. I just don't know when she's available. I don't know what's in her head. It felt like this was their way of writing her off, but I think only for a brief period of time. I think she'll be back. I think we'll get another match with them. But if not, that, you know what? That's a good way to go out. You know, you put over Lyra, who just turned heel. She could use all the help she can get. And you go on your way. We just haven't had any news reported about what her contractual status is. I mentioned Punk and Cody. They were tag team partners against Gunther and Sami Zayn, with the caveat that if Gunther and Sami could pull off the win, they would be added to the WWE title match at SummerSlam to make it a fatal four-way. But with everything that's been going on with Gunther and Nick Aldis, you had to know that that was going to be the SummerSlam match. And sure enough, during the match, Aldis made an appearance. He's the general manager of the show. Even the GM is interfering in matches. And he whacks Gunther in the head with the championship belt. The referee was bumped, so he didn't see it. And then Cody ends up pinning Gunther. Death, taxes, and Cody Rhodes defeating Gunther. This man is incapable of beating Cody Rhodes. He lost to Cody 2 years ago at Crown Jewel. The whole gimmick being you have the world champion from one brand against the world champion from the other. He lost to Cody there. He lost to Cody in Italy. He lost to Cody on SmackDown a few weeks ago. Then they restarted the match. And again he lost. Failed to win the title. You go to Night of Champions in Riyadh. And it was a triple threat, right? It was Cody, it was Sammy, it was Gunther. Who walked out as the champion? Not Gunther. And then here in this tag team match, he takes the pin. And oh, by the way, I forgot to mention that the night before on SmackDown, they were in the main event. And again, he failed to beat Cody Rhodes. What is that? Six times? Seven times? I mean, he could retire all the old guys. He could retire Goldberg at the end of his career, John Cena at the end of his career, AJ Styles at the end of his career. But he cannot figure out Cody Rhodes. I don't know what it is about it. Now, when the match was over, everything seemed to be copacetic between Cody and Punk. Cody handed Punk the WWE Championship as he was gazing at the belt, but he hands it to him. Punk slings the belt over his shoulder, and in doing so, seemingly unbeknownst to Punk, the strap strikes Cody in the eye. Punk walks off. Cody is standing there stunned, like, what the fuck? And so in the back later, they filmed this for their social media. Cody went up to Punk to confront him. He was very hot about what had happened. Punk was just like, what are you talking about? And Cody said, I just need to know that that was not on purpose. And then at the SummerSlam kickoff event that they held on Sunday, things got even more heated and really boiled over between the two of them because they got into a war of words. Punk ended up face washing him. They had to be separated. And so now things are finally going to start to pick up. I expect there to be a good back and forth, hopefully, on SmackDown this Friday on the mic between them. As far as Gunther and all this goes, it was confirmed at the kickoff event on Sunday. The match is official. Triple H made the call. It will be Gunther one-on-one with Nick Aldis. And so this will be, for Aldis, his first wrestling match of any kind in 3 years. He's a former TNA world champion. He's a two-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion for well over 1,000 days combined. So he's got the pedigree. You know, he's got the resume. I thought Aldis was a very solid, you know, more of a technical worker. I thought the way he carried himself as the national treasure when he was the champion in the NWA, clearly very much tried to pattern himself after those old school champions like Ric Flair, the traveling champion, walking out in the nice suits and everything. And so, but it's been a very long time. This is his first time in the ring. I'm sure he's been dying to get in the ring. I can't think of a better opponent for him to be doing it with than Gunther. So that's an attraction on the SummerSlam card that should be cool to see. As far as Gunther, we can have that conversation about the fall of Gunther. The fall of Gunther from where he was at the beginning of the year to where he is now. To be at the beginning of the year coming off the man who not only beat John Cena, but made John Cena tap out, as pathetic as the tap was. Tapped out John Cena, retired AJ Styles at the Royal Rumble, that you would tell me 7 months later he would be in the ring at SummerSlam wrestling the general manager of SmackDown. You cannot tell me that that isn't a come down from where he was. And now that he's had all these opportunities to win the championship and he has failed every single time, I don't have the appetite to see them constantly just kind of utilizing him in that role and giving him another title shot. So like coming out of SummerSlam, I don't have any fucking idea what you do with Gunther. I mean, I feel like you sort of have to go back to the drawing board and push the reset button and try to figure out, like, map out the next 6 months for him. You know, to try to protect him as an attraction on the show, but if he's not going to be challenging for the championship, then what do you have him doing? You know, there is someone on that SmackDown roster I would love to see him working with. Ilya Dragunov, we haven't seen him in months and months. Maybe it's a visa issue. I don't know what's going on with him. He vanished. I don't know when we're going to see him back on TV. I mean, at this point, between him and Stephanie Vaquer, it almost has to be visa related. I don't know what else it would be. Yeah, I mean, he's always on social media. There's pictures of him at, Natty and TJ's school that they have. He's in the ring. He's rolling. He's wrestling. He's grappling. He's getting physical, right? He doesn't look hurt. I don't know what's going on. But get him in the ring with Gunther. Let's get a program going with those two on SmackDown. That's what I want to see. For Sami Zayn, what role does he fill at SummerSlam? Sami really got fucked on Saturday, if you think about it, because through no fault of his own, the reason his team lost is because his boss interfered in the match. His boss blasted his tag team partner in the head with a championship belt. That's the only reason Sami Zayn is not going to SummerSlam to wrestle for the title. How do you remedy that? Do you only put him in the match and turn it into a triple threat? They seem pretty committed to this being a one-on-one match. I don't think that's going to happen. At the very least, though, you have to give Sami the first shot coming out of SummerSlam, right? Whoever wins, whoever's the champion coming out of that show, give him the first shot on that first SmackDown coming out of SummerSlam. It's the only fair thing to do. I stand with Sami. The man was screwed. Not the first time that WWE has screwed over a Canadian on one of their shows. And then they close with 20 plus minutes of mostly posing with Roman Reigns and Jalen Brunson, the captain of the 2026 NBA champion New York Knicks. And the crowd loved it, of course. I mean, the guy, people joke online like, oh man, Brunson's never going to pay for a meal in New York for the rest of his life. And he shouldn't. And he probably won't. He's now a god in New York. So, of course, his first time back in the Garden since they won the championship, and they give him the full entrance from the back out to the ring, which was ridiculously long. But he goes out there, and everyone is obviously very happy to see him, and Roman gifts him a replica Knicks belt, which I have to say looked pretty badass. That's a pretty gorgeous belt, I have to say. And then I mentioned before Seth Rollins comes out, Tyrese Halliburton comes out, and you would think they were building to a tag team match. And the show ends with Roman Reigns holding up the Larry O'Brien trophy to close the show. As someone, I'm sure, sitting at home watching this show in Melbourne, Australia, is scratching their head wondering why they should care about any of this. If only you lived in New York, you would recognize the significance of this. Raw last night. Oh, boy. I thought Raw last night was one of their worst shows of the year. Just an absolute slog of a show, a boring show built around the Bloodline. Although no Roman Reigns on the show, he got the week off to rest up after all that aura farming that he was doing on Saturday. It really takes a lot out of you. I mean, look, we need to support our farmers. WWE, they used to have its own hog farmer, Henry Godwin. He used to feed slop to all the pigs. Now we get a different kind of slop on these shows. But there's no farmer who works harder than an aura farmer. So it was built around the Bloodline, the Judgment Day, and Danhausen. Far too much Danhausen on this show. And I like Danhausen. I do. And I'm happy for all the success that he's had in a very short period of time. I mean, this guy only debuted at the end of February for them. This is a man whose convention lines, when he was under contract to AEW, but he was doing indies and he was doing conventions. His convention lines were starting to dry up. Like, you could just walk up to his table. It wasn't like the lines were wrapped around for Danhausen. And then he signed with WWE, and look at him now. They've turned him into a superstar. I like the guy, but if they keep this up, I won't for much longer, and neither will a lot of other people. Maybe not the kids. The kids will love Danhausen no matter what. But there is a breaking point in which you give us too much of someone. Especially when it's a comedy character. And it just feels like you turn the entire show into one big comedy sketch. The guy had like half a dozen different segments on the show last night. And the show ended 15 minutes early. And now they've announced that he's going to be in concert with Joe Hendry next week. And he'll be at SummerSlam. He's going to be wrestling Dominic Mysterio. I think the real sin with that isn't that he's wrestling Dom on the SummerSlam card, but that Danhausen or the Danhausen and Dom stuff has become the real backstory for the Women's World Championship match between Io Sky and Liv Morgan. Because Danhausen, he cursed Liv right before her Queen of the Ring match, and then she went on to lose to Io. He tried to curse her again last night. She smacked the shit out of him. She's been after him about giving back the money that he previously took from them. You owe us $100,000. Where's our money? I mean, things are so thin on the women's side right now on that show that that's been more of the stronger story for that match than anything that Liv or Io themselves have been doing. And it's all comedy, which is the point that I was making before. Everything is turned into a joke on this show. The match coming up with Io is going to be Liv's first title defense since WrestleMania when she won the championship. That was in April. It's going to be August. But to be honest with you, if I think back to when Io was the champion last year, the booking wasn't much better. She won the belt and then she went on to do not much of anything. Not until the Evolution pay-per-view. Or PLE, I'm sorry. Premium live event. Yes. So she didn't do a whole hell of a lot either. All of these women's reigns have been atrocious. Jade Cargill went over 100 days without a single title defense. Lyra Valkyria just turned heel. She got a big win over Bayley at Madison Square Garden. Her lone appearance on last night's show was relegated to 30 seconds during one of the commercial breaks. It didn't even air on the show. Their booking of the women on both shows has been incredibly weak. But the less said about that show last night, the better. CM Punk has only been off Raw for, what, 2 weeks? And it's already falling apart. Next Monday, Roman is back for one last face-to-face with Seth Rollins before SummerSlam, and Brock Lesnar will have a weigh-in with Oba Femi. Over on the AEW side, coming into Dynamite last week, we only had one match official for the Redemption pay-per-view, which is coming up this Sunday in Montreal. We now have eight. So if it feels like much of this card is being rushed together, that's because it is. There was no MJF on the show, coming off his world title loss to Kenny Omega, and it appears that he will not be on the Redemption card. And not even a mention of Hangman Adam Page returning last Saturday on Collision. His name was never even spoken. A former world champion back after 4 months away. That was a very odd choice. They had Adam Copeland and Christian Cage defending their tag team titles against two members of the Death Riders, the Death Riders C-Team, I guess you would say, because they were setting up a match with the Death Rider B-Team at the pay-per-view because they're going to be defending those titles against Claudio Castagnoli and Pac. So they set that up. Andrade got a win over Jake Doyle of the Don Callis family to claim his shot at Mark Davis of the Don Callis family. That's just two of the 27 members of said family. So Andrade will be challenging Davis for the national title at Redemption. So that became our second match that was made official for the show. We had a big championship celebration in the ring with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, his good friends, fellow EVPs. They came out to join him for this. They took the beige MJF belt away from him to present him with the traditional black AEW World Championship belt. And then Kenny proceeded to, you know, talk about how it's been so long, how he lost track of how many days it's been since he last held this championship and what it means to him. Will Ospreay came out. Of course, the two of them are on a collision course for All In. And he asked the Bucks if the two of them could just have the ring together alone. And it was basically just Will Ospreay putting this guy over and saying bruv a whole bunch of times. You know, he said he's an inspiration and he's so happy that Kenny won the belt back and everything, but he doesn't want to be second place or second fiddle. And so may the best man win. That was basically the gist of this promo, which is going to get old very, very fast, by the way, because we still have a good 6 weeks to go before we get to London. And so I sure hope that they got something good planned here, because if they're just going to brother each other every week, that's going to get very boring. But then Kevin Knight interrupted, the reigning TNT champion. He was very upset because MJF had promised him a shot at the world title. And Kenny was like, well, MJF is not here anymore. MJF is not the champion. You expect me to honor a promise that was made by him? He said, I'm not going to do that, but I may give you a shot anyway just because I'm a nice guy. And he proceeded to put Knight over, you know, as the future. I saw something in you from day one, and you're super talented, and you're quick, and you're a great wrestler, and all of this stuff. And basically, he was trying to convince him, you don't need to ride with the Callis family. You don't need Don Callis. I want the Jet. I want the Jet Kevin Knight. I don't want Don Callis' bitch at Redemption if I'm going to give you a shot at this title. You want to become Jet 2 belts, you got to do it on your own. And so things broke down. You know, Knight attacked him and Ospreay tried to attack Knight. Knight bailed and then he got tackled by Darby Allin because right now the two of them are feuding, even though Kevin Knight wants to challenge for the world title. And so things at that point just broke down. So for the third time in less than a year, we have the TNT champion challenging for the AEW World Championship. Now, they did the same thing in the fall last year with Kyle Fletcher, who was TNT champion, and he challenged for the world title in the main event of All Out. I didn't hate it when they did it previously, and I thought, well, this is their way of sort of positioning Kyle Fletcher in such a way to tell people, look, this guy's the future. You know, look at him. He's in the main event of this pay-per-view, wrestling for the world title. That's essentially what they're doing here. Tony Khan is making a choice that it is more fruitful to have a main event with someone younger who's on the rise, even if it's at the expense of having that marquee main event match. We're going to do this rather than, you know, say going with someone like Kazuchika Okada, who's a veteran who has a very long history with Kenny Omega and would make for a much bigger match. But it's purely for the sake of doing a marquee match if you do that. It's not like they would be putting anybody on the rise over in that situation. So that's the choice that he's made here. There are men that have had their careers made by losing a match rather than winning it. So the idea of Kevin Knight going in there and, I mean, 100% guaranteed he's losing this match. But just because he loses does not mean that it hurts him. Just because he loses does not mean he's buried, because people love throwing that word around, right? You lose one match, oh, you're buried. That's it, you're buried. Oh my God, look at this guy. He's walking down the aisle and he tripped. He's buried. Oh my God, look at this guy. He breathed. Buried. That's not how it works. But I do question, you know, just do we... I am still puzzled by the decision to not do Kenny Omega and MJF on that show. The name of the show is Redemption. They're in Montreal. Why would you do Kenny Omega and MJF on television a few weeks before the pay-per-view instead of giving him that big redemption at the show called Redemption? That I still keep coming back to this. It was a very bizarre choice to me. Now it feels like we're almost looking at the redemption story of Kevin Knight, who only just joined the Don Callis family, what, 2 months ago? Actually, not even 2 months ago. He turned heel at Double or Nothing. That was the end of May. He hasn't even been in this group for a full 2 months yet. But you got Kenny Omega out there on TV telling him, man, I know there's a good guy still in you. There's still goodness in your heart. You got to ditch those guys. Do it on your own. His tag team partner, former tag team partner, Mike Bailey, Speedball, confronted him in the back later. I'll be here waiting when the real Kevin Knight shows up. Like, it's like they're trying to tell the Kevin Knight redemption story. But he hasn't been a heel long enough to tell that story. So it's all just very bizarre. My favorite thing, by the way, is yesterday. And I think it's still up. I don't think they've taken it down yet. TSN, which is like the big network up in Canada, they've got over 1 million followers on their X account. Clearly, this was like a pre-scheduled tweet. They posted a tweet basically promoting the Redemption pay-per-view coming up and saying, can Kenny Omega get his redemption in Montreal and win the championship back? And I'm like, oops, who's going to tell them? If that doesn't tell you that plans were changed on this, then I don't know what does. Even TSN is looking at this going, what the fuck? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me either. But Kevin Knight is going to be defending his TNT title this Wednesday, tomorrow, against Darby Allin. The TNT Championship, by the way, has not been defended on pay-per-view since Full Gear. Full Gear took place in November. And I'm not going to count Dynasty because the title was vacant coming into... There was a gauntlet match on that show. It was vacant, and so that doesn't count. That's a terrible stat, though, for what has always been the second biggest men's title in the company. I don't know that that's any longer the case. If you can't have a TNT title defense on any of your major shows in almost a year, that's pretty bad. I think they could have made things more interesting if they made this match on Wednesday non-title. I mean, if you want to do Darby and Kevin Knight for the TNT title, you can save that for London, you know, at the end of August. You can have them wrestle non-title tomorrow night with the idea that the winner will get Kenny Omega and a shot at the world title at Redemption. I don't know why they didn't do that. I think that would have been a better way to go about doing it rather than just having him come out and say, hey, I want a title match. And Kenny says, well, no, that wasn't the promise I made, but sure, I'm a nice guy. I'll give it to you anyway. Okay. Gee, how exciting. Redemption. Let's go through this card as it currently stands. They're going to add more matches this week, I'm sure, and on the pre-show especially. But we got 8 matches that we know of so far. This is the card. I'll throw my predictions in there, and you can, if you want to, share with me what you think yours are. Chris Jericho against Tommaso Ciampa, but not just any Chris Jericho. The Painmaker Chris Jericho. I'm sure you're all shaking in your boots, as Tommaso Ciampa is. Jericho puts a little bit of makeup on his face, and all of a sudden, he's a killer. This is going to be a no-holds-barred match. Ciampa won the first one. They had that match at Beach Break a couple weeks ago. Actually, last week. And he had thrown sand in Jericho's eyes. And so now we're getting the rematch. And I'm sure Jericho will get his win here. Just added after Collision this past weekend, Hikaru Shida will defend her TBS championship against Maya World. I don't see a title change here because Shida just won the belt on July 1st. She won the belt in a Survival of the Fittest elimination match. So we're going to have her retain in that one. Adam Copeland and Christian Cage put their AEW tag team titles on the line against Claudio and Pac. We got to get Cope and Christian to the Wembley Stadium. We got to get them in the ring with the Young Bucks. They ain't losing the belts here. Kyle Fletcher defends the international title against Bandido. The Ring of Honor World Champion titles. You know that Buzz Lightyear meme? The first Toy Story titles. I see titles everywhere. Kyle's going to retain in that one. Mark Davis is defending his national title against Andrade El Idolo, who I predict will become the new champion. In his quest to eventually win the world title, he's got to win some other titles along the way. This will be his first. Also added this past weekend, Jon Moxley and Will Ospreay will team up to take on the Young Bucks. And we've seen Ospreay and we've seen Moxley teaming up on TV now in some squashes over the last few weeks. It's all been building to this. I think it's been building to their first loss. And we shall see how Moxley reacts to that coming out of the match. The tensions are building. But the Young Bucks, if they're going to get a shot at the tag team title soon, then I don't see a reason for them to lose this. Tekla is going to defend her AEW Women's World Championship against Willow Nightingale. And honestly, this one is the toughest one to predict, and this is the one I'm most interested and intrigued by. Because it really could go either way. I'm leaning towards Willow winning the championship and being the one to defend against Mercedes at All In. I think a match with Tekla and Mercedes, it's a little weird because they're both heels. Not impossible to do, and I think that'd be a good match. I think in either scenario, even though we've seen Willow and Mercedes already, I think in either scenario, we would get a really good match out of it. I just don't think they brought Willow back in the way they did, you know, as a surprise in that Casino Gauntlet match to have her win, to go here and have her lose. I just don't see it. So I'm going to go with Willow to win the belt. And Kenny Omega defends the AEW World Championship against the TNT champion, Kevin Knight. Kenny Omega, of course, is going to retain, but this is going to be a big spot for Kevin Knight to be in. The biggest match of his life. It's going to be in the main event of this pay-per-view against Kenny Omega. Don't get no bigger than that. So I'm sure it'll be a really good match, but there is zero chance that Kevin Knight leaves with anything except his own TNT title. Dark Side of the Ring. I mentioned last week that the season kicked off with a double episode on Jeff Jarrett and the battle for TNA wrestling. Of course, begs the question, why would you want to fight for TNA wrestling when you watch these episodes? That's the takeaway from it. Why would you even want to fight for this? Oh my God. But the first two episodes I thought were good, but this was the finale. This was a three-parter. So this was the finale here. And it picked up, again, just to summarize the key points here, picked up from the start of the Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff era, the downfall era of TNA. They covered the infamous talent meeting with Dixie Carter back. It actually aired on their television show in November of 2009. This was a real meeting that she had called earlier in the day. You see all the talent sitting in the stands and she's in the middle and they're listening to her very intently, and her tone and her message was very blunt which is that there had been a lot of concern voiced and criticism voiced, I think it's fair to say, about her decision to bring Hulk Hogan and Bischoff into the company. And her message to the talent roster was very simple. If you question these decisions, you are questioning me, and I cannot have any of that. So you have a decision to make. You're either with me 100% or you're going to have to find another place to work. Basically, dissent will not be tolerated. And that was where she lost the respect of the locker room. And then they got into the whole Monday night war that wasn't, or the Monday night skirmish, as I called it at that time on my show. Big ratings for Hulk Hogan's debut, because this was their first Monday night head-to-head with WWE. They decided, we're gonna go head-to-head. We're going to go into the belly of the beast. And it was the night that Hogan and Bischoff and Flair and a bunch of other people were debuting on the show. And they did big ratings for that show, for Hogan's debut against the return of Bret the Hitman Hart on Raw. And the two shows that night, this was in January 4th of 2010. The two shows, they combined for over 7 million viewers that night. Spike, of course, I mean, they saw this and they were just head over heels. And they moved the show full time to Mondays. The original idea was that we're going to do these maybe quarterly on Mondays and see how it goes. The ratings were so great for this show, though, and they got stars in their eyes, they decided to move Impact full-time to Monday nights. And that lasted all of 2 months before they moved back to Thursdays with their tail tucked between their legs. It was a disaster. So they talked about Jeff Jarrett, because again, the story is really about Jeff. They clearly wanted to do a season, I think, on TNA. And I think one of the producers, I think, may have talked about wanting to do 6 episodes on TNA. For whatever reason, it didn't happen. So this was their chance to, like, weave in as much TNA stuff and Dixie stuff as they could, even if it didn't really have a whole lot to do with Jeff Jarrett. But they kind of brought it back to Jarrett, and they talked about them bringing him back to TV with Karen to feud with Kurt Angle. So they're taking the real-life stuff and turning it into a storyline. But then they also got into the Victory Road incident in 2011 with Jeff Hardy. And this was the most egregious part. Honestly, when I think you look back at the history of TNA and all of the awful things they've done, this right here is number one. This right here is at the top of the list. Jeff Hardy was on drugs at the time. He clearly had a drug problem. He was in the main event of this pay-per-view against Sting. Sting was defending the TNA World Heavyweight Championship against Jeff Hardy on this night. It's very clear to the people who work there, and Eric Bischoff is back there, and D'Lo Brown is the agent for the match, and people, they're not stupid. They can tell that Jeff, this is a bad night for Jeff. Jeff is not in his right frame of mind. And then when it's time for him to go out to the ring, they can't even find him. They don't even know where he is. And it was Bischoff who admitted to this in the episode that, you know, he made the decision. He saw Jeff and he's like, well, we're going to let him go out there. Maybe he can walk it off. Yes, because when one has a drug problem, you could easily just walk it off and everything will be okay. Especially when you do this for a living, where you're actually getting in the ring and you're throwing people around and you're getting physical. You know what the safe choice is? Let the guy go out there and walk it off. These are the kinds of decisions that were being made at that time. And they allowed him to go out there, and he almost fell over himself twice. Bischoff obviously had second thoughts, and he went out to the ring after Sting had come out. The match was about to begin. Bischoff goes out there. He communicates to Jeff under his breath, you know, get the fuck out of the ring and go to the back. Jeff just stares at him, doesn't move, doesn't go anywhere. So he goes over to Sting and tells Sting, look, hit your finish, pin him, and go home and get out of here as quickly as possible. And so that's what they did. Sting hit a Scorpion Death Drop. He held him down. Jeff tried to kick out. Sting held him down as best he could, and he pinned him. This was the pay-per-view main event. That's how it ended. Of all the decisions that you could have made, and I understand it's very last minute, but still, you have an entire talent roster in the back. You don't let that guy go out to the ring. He has no business being allowed out to the ring. Not for his safety, not for the safety of the person that he's in the ring with. And frankly, for the integrity of your company, because the whole situation is so slimy and gross to begin with, you don't let him go out there like that. Find somebody else, send them out there, and give the people a main event with someone else. even if they're going to be disappointed, right? I mean, there's nothing you could do about that, but at least you'll give them a match. At least you'll give them a main event. And look, even if they let him go out to the ring and then they decided, oh shit, we can't do this. You had a certain period of time there where when Bischoff is going out there to talk to these guys, you could have found somebody in the back and given him a few minutes to just quickly warm up and get ready and go out there and we'll just call it on the fly. We'll feed you cues. We just got to get a main event out there. They never gave anybody a main event. They sent Jeff out there, then they ended it, and then they went off the air. Like every wrong decision they could make is the one that they made. It was, the whole thing was just a complete and total embarrassment. Hulk Hogan in TNA didn't last even 4 years. They covered the end of Hogan's run there. Hogan wanted to make sure he went out with some sort of story. That being that they offered him a new contract and he said, that sounds like a great deal, but not for me. I quit. And as he walks off, the president of the company, Dixie Carter, latches onto his leg like a small child, trying to stop him from leaving. Yes, this is something that really happened. That was the end of Hulk Hogan in TNA. And then they get into Jeff Jarrett starting up Global Force Wrestling after, Anthem then acquires TNA. They still own TNA to this day. But they decide to bring Jeff in. Why don't we merge the whole Global Force thing together with TNA? And they did, and it ended up being a disaster. And then they get into Jeff's personal issues. His life spirals at the bottom of the bottle. Then the redemption arc. You know, he goes to rehab. He gets his life in order. He is inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2018. And then later on, he joins All Elite Wrestling, where he continues to work today and mentors a lot of the younger talents. They got Tony Khan to come on and talk about Jeff. So they covered a lot of what I call the LOL TNA moments from over the years. They did leave out a bunch of them because, I mean, it's only 3 hours between, not even a full 3 hours, between all three episodes. You can only cover so much. The big one that I felt like should have been covered or at least mentioned is the fact, and this is like peak LOL TNA, is the fact that Dixie Carter cost TNA not one, but two different television deals. The first one was the Spike TV deal, and this company has never been the same since they lost TV with Spike. But basically, Spike was not thrilled about the ratings that they were doing. And they had been paying TNA somewhere in the range of, I want to say maybe $14 to $16 million, I think, per year. I don't know if it was per year or over the course of the deal. Let's say per year. And Dixie Carter insisted that they get more money at the end of this deal. So she had her number that she wouldn't budge from, which was completely preposterous. And they thought the same thing. They're like, yeah, we're not giving you more money when your ratings have gone down. So you know what? I think we're just going to end this relationship. So basically, she overplayed her hand. She overshot the target and cost them a TV deal. Had she been willing to come down, they might have been able to keep Spike. But then beyond Spike, the bigger one, this is just the coup de grace of the entire thing. And I really wish they would have gotten into this. They had television. They bounced around so many different places. If I tell you, if you look at the history of this company, they had what I believe was a paid time slot on like Fox Sports Net. After the initial early days of them doing weekly pay-per-views, which just wasn't sustainable, they got a slot on Fox Sports Net. Out of that came television with Spike TV. And then, again, I'm getting maybe not the order right here, but from Spike, they ended up on Pop TV, and then they ended up on Destination America, and then they ended up on, what was it, the Outdoor Network or something like that. They bounced around so many different places. But they were on Destination America. I couldn't even tell you if I have Destination America. I couldn't tell you what Destination America is even about. But they had TV on there. And I guess they had put out some sort of press release or announcement touting the TNA ratings. But they left out a specific metric, +3 or something with DVR. Something pissed off Dixie Carter. They had left it out. And she sends an email that was meant to be an internal email, doesn't realize that she copied, among other executives at Destination America, the president of the network, calling them dummies and bashing them. And then I think it was like a week later, they lost TV with Destination America. Gee, I wonder why. I mean, if that isn't peak LOL TNA, then I don't know what is. And yet this company continues to survive. It may not always thrive, but it continues to survive after nearly a quarter of a century. This past week, the audience that they did on AMC Network last Thursday, their highest AMC audience since coming to the network in January, 286,000 overnight viewers. Good for TNA. But this is a company, like Scott Steiner said in the episode, should have died 1,000 times over the years. There were so many reasons for this company to no longer be in business, and yet they continue to find a way to survive. That really is the story, the essence of TNA. Now, Dark Side of the Ring tonight, as I am recording this, the next episode is going to be covering an infamous independent wrestling match between Samoa Joe and Necro Butcher. And this is kind of cool. They are producing, they're actually partnering with independentwrestling.tv and Enjoy the Ride Records for a limited edition VHS release of tonight's episode. Along with the Dark Side of the Ring episode, the VHS will include the infamous Necro Butcher Samoa Joe match that the documentary is based on. Only 300 copies of the VHS are being put on sale, with 50 of the copies being signed by Butcher and Joe. Pre-orders, they opened earlier today, and again, the episode will premiere later tonight on Vice TV. So, very, very cool. If you want to get your hands on that, if they're not already gone, you can go ahead and check that out. One last note, former WWE star Siva Afi, also known as CV Afi when he went there, died last Thursday at the age of 77. Afi was trained by The Rock's grandfather, High Chief Peter Maivia, and wrestled from the 70s through a good part of the 90s, including headlining a 1985 Aloha Stadium show where he wrestled Ric Flair to a 60-minute draw for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. That show still holds the attendance record for a wrestling event in Hawaii. They did that man dirty when he made his debut at Madison Square Garden. It's an infamous match where Howard Finkel introduces him as from the Fiji Islands, and the crowd just comes alive. And then Howard calls him Superfly, and the crowd goes wild because they thought that it was the return of Superfly Jimmy Snuka, who had left the company the year before. But when he walked out, it definitely wasn't Jimmy Snuka. It was the dollar store version of Jimmy Snuka. And you could just hear the air come out of the crowd, how just deflated they get, and then the boos ring out. Even when he won the match and he was the babyface, they booed him. They booed that man out of the building his first night in, and after that, he was done. They used him as an enhancement talent for the rest of his time there. I always loved how they gave him the theme to Shaft as his entrance music. They gave him the Shaft, all right. It was actually quite appropriate. Tried to pass it off like he was Jimmy Snuka's cousin. Nobody bought it. Later on, he was convicted for acting as the getaway driver in a 1996 robbery and kidnapping. 7 counts of kidnapping he was convicted on. He drove the car while the other men broke into the home of a suspected bookmaker, where they held 9 people at gunpoint and ransacked the place. And he spent 10 years behind bars before being deported back to Samoa. Hey, it could have been worse. You know, the fans could have chanted murderer at him like they did Snuka after what he did to his mistress. I'll take being booed over chance of murderer. Got a couple of emails from you guys. And the email address, if you want to send something on in, thesolemonster@gmail.com. We got a question and a comment. We'll start with Jack from San Diego. Unless I'm mistaken, I don't think AEW has ever done a special referee stipulation before. That got me wondering if perhaps the Kenny Omega-Will Ospreay title match at All In could add MJF as the referee. He has history with both men, so I think it could work story-wise. Do you think this could add to the match, or do you feel like it would be unnecessary? AEW has done the special referee stipulation a few times, and one of those times was with MJF many years ago. It was a cage match on Dynamite. I want to say it was, I don't remember who his opponent was. I'm almost positive Wardlow was in the match. And MJF, he donned the stripes. So it's a role that he's played before. I mean, you could do it. It's not like he hasn't had recent history with the two of them, but like, why? Like, why would Tony Khan allow that? If you just stop for a second and think about it, what would be the point of him refereeing the match? Feels like a waste of MJF. You know, either have him wrestle somebody else, or if he's going to make some grand return, let him make a grand return. Making him the referee to me would be kind of lame. So I wouldn't really be a fan of that idea. And Carlos from Vermont. As a lifelong New York Jets fan, I can honestly say that 20 plus years of Brady ruining my love of football was pretty bad. Then, if that wasn't bad enough, he goes through my brother's team, the New Orleans Saints, on his way to winning the COVID Bowl of 2021. Then, if that wasn't enough, there he is every Sunday calling the NFL Sunday Game of the Week, his voice just grating on my nerves. And then, if that wasn't enough, there he is kind of lurking around Logan Paul and WWE, trying to build a buzz for a possible appearance or match. And then came that TMZ story. It's ironic because most times I don't watch Raw, and I'm sure as hell not going to spend $30 on a pay-per-view years removed from the $9.99 price on the old network. $30 for that product in this economy? I often think maybe it's time to find a new hobby or just a new company to watch to get my wrestling jollies off. Maybe Tom is my herald of the apocalypse of watching this particular product. Change is our only constant. It's the first time I've ever heard Tom Brady referred to as the herald of the apocalypse. Well, get ready. He may be coming on into WWE to do what? I have no idea, but whatever it is, it can't be good. Anyway, hopefully that got you guys all caught up on the key news of the week. Again, you can email me if you have questions or comments, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can find me on X, @solomonster, if you want to reach out to me there. And I'll be back with you next Tuesday for a brand new installment of the Uncrowned Wrestling Show. We'll have SummerSlam predictions. We'll have a full card at that point. We'll get to talk about that and all the news of the week. And when it comes to the news of the week, if you didn't know, now you know. I'll see you back here next Tuesday for more Uncrowned. Until then, take care, guys.